If getting out of the military felt like slamming on the brakes, and now you're stuck between missing the rush of a deployment, feeling totally out of place at work, maybe even at home, you're not the only one carrying that weight. You might still want to be a good dad, a solid husband, a reliable coworker, but some days the stress that you've endured and the injuries maybe that you've encountered are worse than any firefight that you ever rolled through. Imagine trading that edge for something else, a new mission, a tight crew that you can get along with. Maybe even some time out in the mountains where your body and brain finally calm down enough for the big questions to make sense again. That is exactly what retired Marine Colonel and Warriors and Quiet Waters CEO Brian Gilman shares with us today as he walks through how nature, evidence-based coaching, and small veteran cohorts are helping post-9/11 combat vets move from drifting through life to truly thriving. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial will be both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Brian, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
I'm really, really grateful to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we kind of get into the meat of this episode and kind of what you're doing now, but I'd love for you to kind of fill us in a little bit about yourself and kind of your background, your journey from the Marine Corps to where you're at today and all that kind of stuff, mostly for the listeners. So, you know, anyone who's not familiar with you and who you are, they can kind of get an idea who we are talking with today.
Sure. So my name is Brian Gilman. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Warriors and Quiet Waters Foundation, which is a 501c3 veterans impact organization based in Montana. Montana native, grew up in Butte, Montana, and felt the call to serve late in my college career. So applied to the Marine Corps about halfway through my senior year in college. After I graduated, got accepted into the Marine Corps Officer Candidate School and was commissioned a second lieutenant in January 1994 with the intent to serve 4 years. But the Marine Corps did a great job of continuing to put what were incredible opportunities in front of me. So I ended up staying 27 years in the Marine Corps, served in a variety of billets in mostly infantry, reconnaissance, and Marine Special Operations Command billets. Was a reconnaissance Marine by trade, promoted to the rank of colonel and retired in 2020 out of Camp Lejeune, Marine Special Operations Command, to come back here and lead Warriors and Quiet Waters Foundation. The only reason I'm here is I got assigned a billet that I didn't really want when I was assigned to the Joint Staff as a lieutenant colonel at the Pentagon. I got assigned to an office called the Chairman's Office of Reintegration, thinking out I was going to the J3, the Operations Directorate on the Joint Staff. As it turns out, this Chairman's Office of Reintegration was a office that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, at the time created within his office of the chairman to lead the military efforts and create an effective reintegration pathways for veterans. You know, like everybody that understands what their role is, I bloomed where I was planted. And even though I didn't want the job, fell in love with the work, fell in love with the idea of working in, you know, a purpose-driven organization, a nonprofit when I retired, primarily because of the 400 or so nonprofits that I got the chance to bump up against while I was serving in that billet. And that's really what led me here. I was serving as the Chief of Staff at Marine Special Operations Command when this opportunity here at Warriors and Quiet Waters presented itself. And it was pretty quick, this, you know, conversation between my wife and I was a veteran services organization in my home state, in the city my mother lives in, serving post-9/11 combat veterans. So it was the perfect transition that I was looking for. And it was definitely absolutely the right decision, because I get this opportunity to come to work every day, lead this incredible team and have the impact that we're having on post-9/11 combat veterans. So that's how I got here.
Awesome. And I want to get more into what Warriors and Quiet Waters is all about and things like that too. But it's awesome that you were able to find something that's close to home, close to where you want to be, and you didn't have to kind of make those sacrifices where a lot of people, they might find a perfect opportunity for them themselves, but it's not in the place that they want to be, or vice versa. And so then you end up kind of being torn. Like, is that really what I want to be doing? Is that really where I want to be? But in your case, it seems like that's exactly what you want to be doing and exactly where you want to be. So that's really awesome.
I'm extremely aware of the incredible, unique opportunity this gave me. Most veterans don't get that alignment across all of their needs when they transition out of the service. So we're filled with gratitude, believe me, for this opportunity.
So, well, that's great. That's great. So you mentioned Warriors in Quiet Waters is obviously the organization you're talking about, mm-hmm. How they help post 9/11 combat veterans and their loved ones and things like that. Tell us about the organization. What exactly is it that you guys do and how do you help work with these veterans?
Yeah, I'll talk about what we do now. Then I'll briefly talk about, how we got started. So what Warriors in Quiet Waters is today, as I mentioned, we're a 501c3 veterans impact organization, and our organization's purpose is to empower post 9/11 combat veterans to thrive and live purpose driven lives. We do that through nature based programs, but it's the nature activities that we do are not the point of the program. They're really co-facilitators in the program, and we can talk later if you'd like about how nature fills that role. Really what we do is we use nature to put the veterans in the psychological and the emotional place they need to be in order to grapple with the hard, challenging questions that the rest of the program is going to throw at them in terms of how they build strength in these domains of thriving so that they can live thriving, purpose-driven lives after the military. So it's anchored in week-long experiences in nature here in Montana at the beginning and the end, and it's a 9-month-long program. In between those week-long experiences at the beginning and the end, the program's delivered remotely to the veterans in the places that they live through our program facilitators, and it's evidence-based programming. Our program's based on the most empirically rigorous research that's been done on what it takes human beings to thrive. And really, that's what the program is about. It's about empowering veterans to build strength in these domains of thriving, so that they can continue to have meaningful lives of service and purpose and continue to make a difference in the places that they live. And they get to pick what that difference looks like. So that's what we do now. That's not how we started. We were founded in 2007 by another retired Marine colonel, Bozeman, Montana native, lifelong fly fisherman named Eric Hastings, who was a Vietnam veteran. He flew 168 combat missions in Vietnam, lost 5 pilots in his squadron, and he found meaning and healing from his experiences in Vietnam through fly fishing. Fast forward 2006, Eric's retired, and him and his wife conceive of this idea to create a fly fishing program for veterans to serve the tragically wounded warriors that were coming out of the combat theaters at the time. As you know, height of the wars, a lot of combat veterans coming home wounded. So they created a week-long fly fishing experience that was intended to really provide critically wounded combat veterans an opportunity to get outside of that hospital environment, find some respite from the stress and anxiety associated with their wounds, their transition, that hospital environment, learn a new skill, fly fishing, and connect them to a larger community of other veterans and volunteers that care deeply about them. And that's what we did for the first up until 2019. So what's that, 12 years of the organization, and that program delivered exactly what was needed. The board recognized that the veterans' needs were changing. So that's why we transformed our programming to what it is today.
Yeah. It's important, I think, to keep your ear to the ground and kind of understand what it is that your kind of target demographic is looking for, what they need. And so, making that pivot to encompass different things that maybe you weren't originally intending to. I think that's awesome, because you're not just trying to pigeonhole everyone into the same same one type of thing that this is all we do, this is it, and we're not changing and we're not going to budge, because at some point things are going to have to change. And that's pretty good. Now I've had guests on the show before, actually one guest in particular, he was like one of my first guests on the show years ago, and he was talking about how nature to him is his therapy, it's his church, it's his just way to go out and kind of clear his mind, just getting outdoors, mm-hmm. getting in touch with nature, whether it's hiking on a trail or canoeing down a river, or whatever it is that he's doing. He's outside, and nature is his place where he goes for healing. And I'm sure that's the case with a lot of folks. When they get outside, they start to recognize that there is this healing effect. But when so many of us are, our jobs are inside, our houses, we're coming back home to our families, and we're inside, and we're not really getting outside, touching grass or letting the sun hit our face or any of those things, we start to miss out on that. And so I think the nature piece of it that you were just talking about is pretty important. And not only just while you're going through your program, but for the long term too. I mean, I think everyone needs to get outside and, whether it's go for a walk or go for a bike ride or whatever, something just simple, just getting outside, I think is important no matter where you are, just to get out there. Right.
Yeah. And I mean that the Warriors in Quiet Waters started as an organization that served veterans through nature, primarily because of the experiences of our founder, Eric, and his experiences fly fishing. It was incredibly attractive to me because those are the same experiences I had growing up here in Montana, a lifelong outdoorsman. When I needed to go somewhere to get centered, to figure things out, just to relieve stress, I always went to the mountains or the water here in Montana. Mm-hmm. So I understood, and Eric understood, what nature could provide us. I really didn't understand the why behind it till I got here and really started digging into the research that explains it all. And the fact is that if you give it a chance, nature's going to have that effect on all human beings. I mean, there's a huge body of research that's been done, and it identifies the physiological changes that happen as a result of us spending time in nature. Just spending time in nature when you're not paying attention to your phone, your cortisol levels are coming down. So your stress and your anxiety is being relieved. Your serotonin levels are coming up, which means your positive affect, your hopefulness, your positive view on the world is increasing. Spending time in nature actually increases the production of killer cells, those cells in our body that fight disease. You're spending time in the sun, so your circadian rhythm is getting back into sync, and you're probably going to be sleeping better. You're typically more active when you're spending time in nature. So all of these positive physiological effects happen just spending time in nature. And then when you add a activity like the activities that we utilize in our program, fly fishing, archery hunting, and photography, you get some additional benefits. These are all activities that require a light focus, but they don't require, the kind of problem solving focus that we apply when we're trying to solve a math problem or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're enjoyable activities. So when you're doing those kind of activities in nature, the first thing that happens is you're enjoying them. So you're looking forward to more. So your brain starts dumping dopamine into your system. And dopamine is that chemical that causes us to anticipate future hope, future things that we look forward to. And a combination of comfort and dopamine together in your system, based on what the research tells us, makes us more creative and better problem solvers.
Okay.
And then when you think about the light focus aspect of it, what that does is it actually activates the regions of your brain that are most active when you're lightly focused, when you're mind wandering. And the combination of all that together gives you an opportunity to arrive to epiphanies. Have you ever had an epiphany in the shower?
Yeah, yeah.
Or driving down the highway, that requires light focus. And there's actually a name for that those regions of the brain that they call the default mode network. And when the default mode network is active, while you're lightly focused on the activity at hand, those regions of the brain that are active are also processing things that you've been consciously processing. And that allows you often to arrive to those epiphanies. They actually call it the shower effect, because sometimes you arrive at epiphanies in the shower.
Sure.
So when you think about all these things coming together, your stress and anxiety is coming down, your positive affect, your outlook on life is becoming more hopeful. You're becoming a better problem solver, more creative, and you have an opportunity for epiphanies. These are the kind of conditions that we want veterans who are struggling with their transition and trying to figure out how they can make their future as meaningful as their past. That's the place we want to put them. And while that wasn't the design at the outset of our program, as we designed the Built for More program, that was the intent. And I tell my team all the time, one doesn't work without the other. What makes our program effective is we combine that evidence-based programming with those experiences in nature, where we're seizing on the opportunity when the veterans are in their best place to solve those challenges and to arrive at those epiphanies. So the program's a complete package, and every piece of it's just as important as the others.
So you have the nature pieces kind of bookends on either end, right? And then in the middle, you mentioned there's some virtual stuff that people can do from home, essentially. What do those sessions look like, and what's the frequency, time commitment, that type of thing that you look for?
That's a great question. So when we designed the Built for More program, we knew that the kind of change that we were trying to achieve wasn't something that could happen in a short amount of time. So we knew that it was going to take some time. It was going to take work on behalf of the veterans in order to fully benefit and achieve the outcomes we were trying to achieve in the program. We also recognize that the veterans that we serve have busy lives, and the chances of them coming to Montana for big chunks of time were probably very limited, as well as their ability to come to Montana twice in a year. So we spread the program deliberately across over 9 months to deal with those realities of the veterans' lives and to make it manageable. So a veteran's going to spend about 3 hours a week engaging with the program when they're at home. And I want to clarify that the veterans go through the program in cohorts. So if you're a veteran in going through the Build for More program, you're going to be in a cohort with seven other veterans. So cohorts of eight combat veterans that go to it together. And that's key, because the one of the primary outcomes that we try to achieve at the beginning of the program, at that initial experience when they're here in Montana, is to create tight bonds within that cohort and create commitment to the program and commitment to each other, that they're going to do the hard work and they're going to be for each there for each other as they go through the program. So what it looks like when a veteran's at home going through the Built for More program, we've built online content based on what the research tells us about these domains of thriving, where they can access that content online and learn at their own pace. There's individual learning activities that they'll do after consuming that content. There's directed journaling prompts that we give them, where they will journal on the content of the module that they're in, because a lot of the learning that happens in this program happens through deep reflection, and journaling is a great tool to use that. Every module over that 8 month period when they're at home is also anchored in a peer-to-peer discussion on the module content between two individuals in the cohort, and then it culminates in a cohort-wide facilitated discussion that's facilitated by our program facilitators. And these program facilitators are also really, really what they are. They're cohort managers. They're the ones that keep the cohort together and moving, help them solve problems, ensure they have access to the content, everything that they need. And they really drive the learning home in those facilitating discussions that happen in each of those modules. So there's six modules that they'll go through over the course of about 8 months. Then they'll come back to Montana for a capstone experience, another week-long immersion in nature with their cohort, getting that cohort back together, further cementing those bonds that we're trying to create in that cohort, and giving them an opportunity to put everything that they've learned and grown in the program into context. And then we ask them to put everything that they've learned in the form of what we call a roadmap on paper, which is they put on paper how they're going to apply everything that they brought on in the Build for More program to their lives going forward. So they got a toolkit to use when, transition happens in the future, when they're facing future adversity, when they're trying to achieve big goals, things like that. They got a toolkit that they've built, and they've reflected on how they're going to apply that toolkit to their lives going forward.
Yeah, that's awesome if they have that takeaway where they can now use this in other situations going forward down the line, because some of these tools are not necessarily tools that you need to use every single day, where you're not facing a crisis every single day, right? And you're not facing, those types of things. But when inevitably those things will eventually happen, unfortunately, and when they do, how do you handle those? How are you going to approach the whatever the situation is, and you can go reach into that toolbox and use those skills that you learned and use those to help out in whatever the situation is. But something else that you had mentioned, something about journaling and how that gives the opportunity for some deep reflection with those people who are going through the program. One of the things I've noticed, just kind of a anecdotal, you know, commentary here, but one of the things I've noticed with journaling is when you're writing down something and you're thinking about an event or something that happened, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, you're writing it, you write a whole lot slower, you know, pen and paper, you write a whole lot slower than you think or speak. And so right now I could describe an event, you know, that, you know, XYZ happened and this is where I was and this is what I felt and this is what all the things, and I could tell you it in about 10 seconds. I wouldn't even get the first line written in 10 seconds. And so in order to get the full story out, it's going to take me some time. And in the downtime, if you will, while I'm busy writing, my brain can kind of think a little bit more, a little bit deeper about whatever that incident is or that I'm writing about, whatever the thing is. And it gets me thinking a little bit more. Not just me, it's anybody really. Gets you thinking a little bit more. And sometimes it can reveal certain things that maybe you forgot about, or maybe you consider a different angle, or maybe you just have a different way of thinking of whatever the situation is. And it can really help you drill down into the nitty gritty of whatever it is. And that's where sometimes you might find some healing taking place, because you might have uncovered something that maybe you forgot all about, depending on how long ago whatever it is that you're thinking about took place. And so you know, that journaling is an important thing that you're talking about there. But
it's a critically, you know, critical tool that we use in the program. As you mentioned, it causes you to think deeper. It reinforces retention. It sparks your memory, all those things that you talked about. And that's why we use it, because it's an incredibly effective tool for thinking deeply about different subjects. And, you know, it's also something that they can go back and refer to.
Yeah.
The journaling is for them only. We don't collect their journals. It's for them only. We just ask for them to tell us that they've completed the journaling prompt. And it's there all the time for them to keep and go back and refer to. So it's an incredibly effective tool. It's hard for a lot of veterans in our program. I'll tell you that the journaling is a struggle for many at the beginning, but if they give it a chance, it really becomes an effective tool. So it's a huge part of our program.
Yeah. And sometimes digging up those old memories, the things that are really upsetting or really bothersome, that it can be difficult to get into at first, but once you start working through it, kind of peeling back some of those layers of the onion, if you will, and kind of getting to the core of whatever the issue is, it can really help you figure out how to deal with whatever it is that you're dealing with and move forward from that. But I know there's a lot of veterans who, you know, they struggle with one thing or another, but a lot of times it's that reintegration back into civilian life, or feeling like they have lost a sense of purpose or mission, identity, all of those things after leaving the service. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people listening have experienced something like that. You're working with some of the people who are coming through your program. Is there any indication that someone maybe is maybe not quite ready for going through the full program, or is it, you know, pretty much this is something that can be applied to, you know, just about anybody, you know, depending on where they are, you know, in that journey?
We go through great pains to ensure that we're getting veterans that have a great fit and a great need for our program. You know, those are the two primary factors that we use when identifying veterans to place them in our program. And we have a fairly rigorous process that we go through with that. We'll open up our application a couple times a year. And the first thing that the veteran will do is they'll fill out a very robust online application. That application includes survey responses to what are called psychometric tools. So these are empirically validated surveys that psychologists and psychiatrists have developed to measure things like thriving, anger management, things like that. So they'll fill out several psychometric surveys. So the brief inventory to thriving, the purpose and life scale, anger management scale, connectedness to nature scale. So we see that and we get a score based on that survey that kind of tells us where, based on their responses, they're at in those different domains. And then there are several open text responses to directed questions that we give them that we really utilize to identify their fit and their need and their readiness for the program. those applications are collected and they're first reviewed by my program staff. So every application is reviewed by a member of my program team and they're rated for fit and need. Then they go to a second review by members of my staff that aren't on the program team that are rated in accordance with the same rubric for fit and need. And if there's any differences between that first and that second review, we'll have a conference to resolve it. Then we stack rank them based on their fit and need scores, and then we start calling applicants that we're looking to place in the program and do a 30-minute interview with them to confirm the fit and need. Once we've done that, then we'll work with them to place them in a cohort and place them in a program in the coming year. And we work really hard to try to form cohorts that are based regionally. So a bunch of veterans that are from the Southeast, Northwest, et cetera, because we want that community to continue after the program and putting them together in regions where they live are much easier. And we can tell how like we can talk about how we service that a little bit in our alumni engagement program if you'd like. That being said, the process isn't perfect. We do have veterans that come in the program and struggle a little bit with it. And in many cases that's because of a life event that happens that they can't really give the time that they need to the program, or they're just not a good fit for the program at that time. And we'll work with them. We try to we, you know, we'll do our best to keep them engaged in the program. But occasionally we do have veterans that just can't finish the program, and we will continue to try to stay engaged with them and encourage them to reapply to come back in. So you have to be ready for positive change in your life in order to really capitalize on what Built for More brings to you.
Yeah, and I think that's a key to, any type of therapy or anything else. Like if you're not
Absolutely.
ready for it, if you don't, in some cases you don't want it or don't think you deserve it or things like that, it's probably not going to be as effective as someone who's like, I want to make this change. I need to make this change.
Absolutely.
So let's do this right now. Not to say that, oh, just give up and don't do anything. If that's you, it's just, your results may vary. If depending on your fitness for that type of program. But yeah, so you talked about the different cohorts having kind of a regional focus and trying to keep those folks in touch with each other for a little bit of that camaraderie that I think a lot of us miss after getting out of the military. We all served with people. We all made friends, and we all had people that were important to us while we served. And then, for one reason or another, you grow apart, and you're living in different parts of the country or different parts of the world, and you lose touch with those people. I know that that's happened with me, unfortunately, and I know that many other people are the same way. But in this case, if you get a bunch of people who are, from the same geographic area, it's a lot easier to stay in touch if you're near each other than if you're on
Absolutely.
opposite sides of the country. I know, yeah, sure, there's social media, there's phone calls and text messaging and things like that, but you're talking probably more in-person connection. Is that kind of the gist of it?
Yeah, it is. The great thing about our program is that, we put you together in a cohort of a bunch of like-minded veterans that have had similar experiences. We give you a week of peak experiences in nature that are pretty unique and pretty awesome experiences. And then we give you something to look forward to 9 months later to get back together with that group. So that keeps veterans engaged in the program. Once they complete the Built for More program, we want that cohort to remain strong, because what we found in our program evaluation is that the stronger the bonds in the cohort, the more impactful the outcomes for the individual veterans in the cohort. They're directly correlated. So as a function of our alumni engagement program, we will provide cohorts grants to help them fund a reunion to get back together. That's how important it is for us to
Sure.
ensure that that cohort becomes that veteran's new tribe. You mentioned missing those things when you got out. I believe every combat veteran experiences that, and there are at least 18 different studies that I've read that have identified that loss that veterans experience when they leave the military. They lose their sense of purpose, they lose their identity, and they lose their tribe, that connection. And those are all different pillars in our program. But that community connection piece is, I think, one of the most important. And that's backed up by other research as well. Have you ever heard of the Harvard study of adult development?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, so it's an 80-year-old longitudinal study conducted by Harvard University. It's looked at over 700 participants over the course of their entire lifetimes. It's been an incredibly rigorous study where they They'll survey participants every year. They'll do medical examinations every year. They collect blood markers every year. They do focus groups every year, looking at people over the course of their lifetimes to identify those things that contribute to the longevity and thriving. And what this 80-year-old longitudinal study that's looked at over 700 study participants has identified is that the number one driver of longevity and thriving in life is the quality and the strength of our relationships. More important than heart health, more important than education, more important than your financial readiness, the most important thing are your connections, your community. So we work incredibly hard to build that community in these cohorts and to the broader Warriors and Quiet Waters community as a whole.
Yeah, and that's important too, because the exact reasons you just said. I mean, if you have no community, no connections to other folks, and yeah, I can totally see, without even reading the study, I can totally see how that could
Absolutely.
be an issue for some folks.
Yep.
And it's hard getting out and then going into your civilian job, or in your local community with other civilian people who have no connection to the military, especially someone who has served for many, many years, and during that time period, most of their friends and the people that they associated with were military connected people.
Yep.
Sometimes it feels like it's difficult to fit in with that group. And so, hey, why not get a group of military like-minded folks who all can get together? They live in the same kind of geographic area, and to your point, you can have these reunion type events, and whatever it is that you guys are all into, you can go out and do those things. And I think that's important for continuing all of that too.
I mean, we use the word tribe intentionally. Let's be honest, human beings evolved as tribal social animals. And the way that we look at tribe is it starts with a strong family, but then it extends to a circle of what we call 3 AM friends. Those friends that are going to come running to you no matter the hour or issue, those friends that hold you accountable, those friends that are going to show up when everything else goes wrong, those friends that are going to tell you the truth when no one else will. So it's more than just proximity. It's having that person that you can rely on, and that you can serve as well in their time of need. So we work incredibly hard on rebuilding that tribe, and we want that tribe to persist well after the Build for More program is over. So, and you know, I you mentioned duration of service. That's absolutely a factor, but I also think that the intensity of the relationship contributes to it as well. A combat veteran who served 4 years, yet shared these incredible, intense experiences with the comrades on his or her left or right. What they walked away with was a relationship that was probably more important to them than any other they've ever made in their life. And then trying to replicate that in civilian society when you leave the military is incredibly hard for a number of factors. So, veterans, in my experience coming through the program, sometimes have a hard time connecting outside of that military circle. And we try to give them this tribe that they can rely on forever going forward.
Yeah, and sometimes that shared connection, whatever that experience was, whether it's something in combat, maybe a training event or something like that. There's from folks that I've talked to, there's usually like this one event that like it changes things, where you went from a just a thrown together collection of guys that are now serving together and trying to complete a mission, to all of a sudden, now we're one cohesive unit. We're together. We are, basically a family, at that point. And then, and I've heard that from a number of people, that they've gone through some sort of transformation type experience, and it could be, some people call it like baptism by fire or something like that, where it's just like, right in that moment, it's like, yep, now I know these are my people. Or something else could have taken place, but you share that
Absolutely.
experience, and you really can't share that experience with anybody else who wasn't there. And you're right, those experiences are super meaningful, and that connection, that bond, is super strong. And that's a difficult thing to replicate. So,
Absolutely.
but when you go out and you're out in nature, you're doing the things that, quite frankly, humans were meant to do. Going out and hunting or fishing, or all those things, getting out into nature, that's that's another opportunity to make some of those connections. You know, perhaps not as strong as, you know, while being in a firefight, but still pretty damn strong, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And you know, that's why we use it. You know, we use the term peak experience purposely as well. That's what we're trying to create, is an experience where they're gonna walk away with this incredible sense of awe, wonder, and gratitude for that experience, which helps to create those bonds that, you know, replicate those that are formed in combat. So,
yeah, absolutely. Now, you had mentioned several times the Built for More program, which is basically the program that we've been discussing. Mm-hmm. Are there other programs that you guys offer, other types of things that you guys do, or is it primarily focused around the Built for More program?
It's primarily focused around the Built for More program, but we do have a couple programs that are week-long experiences that serve military spouses and caregivers. So this goes back to our founding when we were originally doing those week-long fly fishing experiences in nature. We have a couples fly fishing program where we'll bring an alumni of the program back together with their spouse and immerse them in fly fishing for a week. We also have a caregiver program where we bring military caregivers together and put them through a week-long fly fishing program. As part of our strategic plan, we're working to incorporate both of those programs underneath the Built for More framework and make them 9-month longitudinal programs that provide the similar types of outcomes that we're seeing for our veterans in the Built for More program. We're just starting to work on that now. And a lot of that's really discovery to identify those needs that are the greatest needs that military spouses and caregivers have that we can serve through a nature-based program. So that's the extent of our programs. We have Built for More, we have our couples program, and our caregivers program.
Yeah, and it's, I think, important too that you're flexible enough that you can pivot to be able to accommodate for those other groups of folks as well, and especially caretakers, because a lot of times they get forgotten.
They do.
With, you know, and it may be a spouse, it may be a, you know, some other family member, maybe not, maybe somebody else. But you know, a lot of times those caretakers are dedicating lots of time, lots of energy, lots of effort, and putting themselves on the back burner, and really they're not getting the recognition sometimes that they deserve. And
one of the biggest outcomes I've seen in our caregiver program is that they discover they're not alone. You know, it is perfectly understandable how they could think that in the world that they live in, but they come to our caregivers program and they're placed in a cohort of 7 other caregivers, and they're sharing similar stories and experiences, and they realize that they too have a tribe, other people that they can rely on that have had similar experiences that they can count on. And that's one of the biggest outcomes of that program. Now we're looking to do more. We're looking to do more for the couples and the caregivers. And that's why we're working to pull them under the Built for More framework as well.
Yeah, that's great. And again, those people have those shared experiences. Maybe not, they weren't there together doing the same thing at the same time, but you know, very similar stories probably, and you know, a way to recognize that, hey, I am not alone. There are other people out there, and I can get through this. That person got through it, I can get through it too.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
And so that can be extremely powerful, extremely helpful in some, whoever it is in their journey of, you know, whatever it is they're going through, having that kind of connection. So for folks who are interested in getting involved with the Built for More program or the spouse program or the caretaker program, where can they go to find out more information and kind of learn a little bit more about the programs, fill out an application, all those kind of things?
Yeah, best place to go is to our website, so warriorsinquietwaters.org. Click on the program link. That'll bring you to the Built for More page, and then you can learn about the Built for More program and the other programs there. And then if you're interested in participating in the program, scroll to the bottom of that page, and you're going to see a section where it gives you an opportunity to sign up for our wait list. We'll open our next program application in January, and we'll be placing all of our program participants for the rest of 2026. So if you're interested in January, I know this podcast is going to air in late January. Go to our website. That application window is going to be open through the end of February. Submit an application and we'll get you in the queue, and we'll make sure that we give you our best look at participating in the program.
Yeah. And so traditionally, I'd imagine that you guys probably have a pretty decent wait list as far as, you know, people who are not to say that you're so backlogged that, you know, don't even bother applying because you'll never get in kind of thing. I'm not saying that, but you guys probably get, you know, a wait list of people so that you, you can group people together the way that you described before by region, but and all that kind of stuff. So that way you know that you're building the best group of folks who are going to have the best outcome for success. And I think that's important that you're able to, you know, kind of put that out there and get folks together and for at the right time, at the right place, at, you know, where it all just kind of works out for all those people. So that's awesome. I will have the link to your website and all your, you know, social media, things like that in the show notes for any of the listeners there who are interested in filling out an application or learning more about the program or anything like that. So you guys can just check out the show notes. You'll be able to find that link there. Anything else that we missed that you'd like to touch on before we wrap up here?
Yeah, I can just think of just two things. You know, number one, there are lots of veteran services programs that you can go to. I will tell you that we know the outcomes that we achieve in the Built for More program because we measure what we do. We work with a third-party evaluator, the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University, that collect data on our participants as they go through our program, and they measure change in the participants, do the analysis against all that data, and then report back to us every year in terms of what we're accomplishing in the program. And what we're seeing is Built for More is accomplishing what it was designed to do. Veterans are coming out of our program with a sense of purpose that's increased twofold. Their sense of thriving, which is a holistic of different mental health indicators that speak to how well a person is doing living their lives. And what we're seeing is we have participants come into our program below the national population average for thriving, and they leave the program above that American population average for thriving. They're sleeping four times better. Their sense of community is increased tenfold. The anxiety and stress that they were dealing with prior to coming through the Built for More program, 100% of our program participants report that anxiety and those stresses are not near to the level that they were before. And 100% of our program participants report back that they feel fully equipped to deal with the challenges that life's going to continue to throw their way. So, you know, the program is delivering that package that we're looking for, and that's veterans that are able to thrive and continue to lead and serve in the communities that they live. So, you know, we're very proud of that. We're up in the ante on our program evaluation in 2026. We're doing a randomized control trial on the program. So the gold standard for program evaluation to really get to causality of the outcomes that we're achieving in the Built for More program. And then the last thing that I'll throw out there is just the ongoing need to invest in post 9/11 combat veterans. The need didn't disappear when we withdrew from Afghanistan, as you know. In many cases, those needs will persist for lifetimes. And mm-hmm. veteran support is probably one of the most underinvested areas of philanthropy in the United States. It garners about 1% of all philanthropic giving in the United States. Oh. And we need to invest more in our veterans, because at the end of the day, thriving veterans make America stronger. They're going to go back and they're going to make sure that their family's thriving, their communities are thriving. The organizations that they work in are going to be better because of them. The government that they serve, the civic groups that they serve are going to benefit from thriving veterans. They also serve as exemplars for the next generation. Ours is an all-volunteer force. And if we want America's sons and daughters to raise their hand to volunteer to serve in the military, we need to show them exemplars and demonstrate that service in the United States military is both valued and valuable, and that they can thrive after their service. And we need veteran exemplars across America demonstrating that to the next generation. So with that, I'd just like to say thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are definitely some great points. And I'm glad that you were able to come on. We talked a little bit before we started recording here. You know, but one of the reasons that I want to have people like yourself on is because there are programs out there. There are absolutely lots of programs out there. And if folks just don't know about the programs, you know, they may start thinking to themselves like, I'm losing hope here. I have no place to turn. But there's always another place, and that's what I've been doing with this show.
Absolutely,
putting out all these resources, people like yourself, and you know, the Warriors in Quiet Waters, and all the other organizations that are out there. I mean, if people are thinking to themselves, man, I've tried everything. Well, I'm pretty sure you haven't. There's always something new.
There's always something else.
And so. You know, just kind of words of encouragement for folks, like just keep trying. Don't give up.
I agree.
And you know, if that one thing that you tried didn't work, try something else. There's always something else. So,
absolutely.
So Brian, thank you again for coming on the show, and thank you for everything that you guys are doing over there, and look forward to hear more great stuff coming out of Montana. So thanks again.
Thank you for doing this podcast, and thank you for your service.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks.